Hello, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 143 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always, and with me as always is Ben. You may know him as Arcane in the forum.
Hey, everyone. It's good to be home.
good to be back, I have to imagine, reunited with your PlayStation 4.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was tears of joy seeing it, and then a lot of hugging and a lot of I love you. I missed you. Yeah.
So much affection for an inanimate object. I remember going to camp in year six and quite enjoying the time there, obviously, but really being keen to play video games when I got home. So that was 20 years ago, as it happens. So time flies, as we mentioned here and there on the podcast. We are a bit later this week. As we noted, you're glad to be home. You were flying home on the day that we usually record, which is yesterday when we're recording this. So we decided to push it forward rather than pushing it forward, just to get a little bit of extra topics for this week's show. And that's probably a good thing we did, because there was some more news about the All-Stars, of course. So we get to talk about that on all one hit. Some other interesting topics this week, both basketball, video game related, and the real NBA. Once again, have some interesting topics from our community members. So thank you very much for your submissions, as always. We'll get to them in due course. But first of all, just wanted to talk about the updates for NBA Live 16. Now, I actually wrote an article about how I feel the ratings have improved in the NBA Live 16 roster updates over the 8 updates that released so far. Actually, it's now 9. A new one came through today, although they haven't posted a blog highlighting all the changes in the latest roster as yet, as of the time I'm recording this. That's hopefully will come out tomorrow. If it does, if and when it does, we will certainly post it on the main page. But you know how we spoke about in previous weeks the possibility of missing certain roster moves, and how another reason why we want the manual updates?
Yep.
In-game roster update functionality?
Yep.
They have actually missed a move in the most recent update. Might have been final updates, probably was finalized before the trade was announced, and we'll actually be talking about that trade a little bit later on as well. That's the Josh Smith trade, where he got traded back to Houston. I saw him still on the Clippers when I played a game earlier today, so that was a bit unfortunate there.
when we record podcasts, how the news suddenly breaks. So
it is,
when
yes.
they finalize their roster and all that stuff, that's probably what happens with them.
I mean, I have actually heard from Erica, who's doing the rosters this year. She did mention that has been a case. I think the very first roster update that was released this season, which I thought was the opening roster update, and I erroneously described as the opening night roster update when I posted the summary on the main page, wasn't actually the opening night roster. That was finalized before the opening night rosters were finalized. The timing, of course, unfortunate, but it is what it is. But the ratings have actually been getting pretty good. They've halved the amount of 90-plus players, 90-plus overall players in the rosters. I think I've mentioned that either last week or the week before when we were discussing
week.
The rosters. Yep. And that's certainly a move for the best. I mean, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, because you never know how the rating scales work. You might remember back in NBA Live 2004, they changed from the 50 to 99 to 0 to 99 ratings in-game. Previously, the 0 to 99 scale was only used behind the scenes in the database, but then they started using it in-game as well. And a lot of the players were rated a little bit lower than they should have been overall. I think Reggie Miller, who was still pretty productive in his last years there, was rated 61 overall because the calculation of the overall rating hadn't been adjusted for the new in-game scale. So you want to see how it works out first. But a few players were a bit overpowered, but they've got a pretty good handle on it now, and they're not really doing too many legacy ratings. For example, Kobe has dropped from 89 to an 80 with his subpar play in his final season, so they're not still keeping him at 90 just because he's an all-time great, things like that. So you can go back and read that article, the Monday tip-off, how ratings got better in NBA Live 16. I do believe the ratings have been getting better, and that although the rosters do leave something to be desired with the lack of proper face updates for a lot of players and some other issues which I've gone into in that article, the ratings have gotten a lot better, so that is good to see.
Well, you know, it's good to see them being consistent with it in that sense, with the roster still coming out. And yeah, I mean, we've talked earlier about would they continue working or just focus on next year kind of thing. So, yeah, no, I'm glad they're still.
I think they've, at the very least they've got to do roster updates every week.
Oh, yeah.
I expect the Josh Smith deal will be in next week's update. Hopefully they also add the All-Star rosters in next week's update as well. I don't believe... I can say they're definitely not in this week's update because they were only officially announced after the roster update came through, so it definitely can't be included this week. Hopefully next week, and with the Josh Smith deal as well. But one thing I have noticed, unfortunately, is there's still been no big moments since December 15th, so that's over a month without new content in that regard.
That's a shame. I mean, we've had some pretty big... I mean, look at the way Curry's broken some records this season and stuff, so I don't know. That's
a couple of game-winning shots as well.
Yeah, you know, big triple-double plays and big high-scoring players from a lot of players. So, yeah, hope to see them in soon. We're wondering why they haven't focused on them this season.
Because they are one of the best features of the rebooted NBA Live series, starting with NBA Live 14, is those big moments. So it is disappointing to see them not update them, because they are great for a quick game to just jump in and play a classic moment, or, you know, after you've watched something on TV, to actually go and be able to play within a few hours, replay it in the game. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to have that feature, and it's something I hope they keep in future.
And to try and, you know, beat your mates.
Exactly, yeah.
Because, yeah, you and I had for 15 or 14, we had to go a couple of goes against each other.
15, yeah, we did, and it's fun to be on the scoreboard. I think there's an achievement for it, and I think there's also, or trophy, I should say, on PlayStation again, trophy/achievement. There's also a trophy, I think, this year again for posting, for beating a big moments challenge within 24 hours of it being posted, which is pretty hard now,
yeah,
since none have been posted for a month. So if that trophy's still there, that one's gone, although I still haven't got the trophy for creating my player, even though I definitely did. So I think a couple of the trophies are bugged anyway. Anyway, they're just trophies. I mean, if you're only playing it to get the trophies, you know, I don't think you'd really...
I don't think you're really enjoying playing to enjoy
for the right reason, yeah. Exactly. But nevertheless, it is a shame to see some of the updates not as detailed or accurate as they should be. That is something that we, as we said before, needs to improve in future years. Certainly sending along our feedback to the development team in that regard, and getting the content like the big moments and the NBA Rewind games, things like that. They have been pushing through new content in Ultimate Team, so it's not like they haven't been doing anything at all with the games. Shaq's in packs this week, actually, the Ultimate Team packs. So, and they actually did a contest you could retweet and get a free card. I'm guessing I haven't won. That would be nice. What a permanent legend. I've been playing a bit of Ultimate Team, actually, and I'm split on the idea of short-term plays, because it's nice to get them and be able to boost your team for a few games, but it's also a tease to unlock a legend card, pull a legend card out of the pack and only have them for two games or one game, as I had for Pistol Pete Maravich. So I'm on the fence about how I like whether I like the short-term players as of this time. But they have been doing that new content. But, yeah, hopefully they can push through that new content for big moments and NBA Rewind and, yeah, get the rosters, get on top of the roster issues.
Let's hope so. I mean, the sales figures have improved since the original release and stuff. So hopefully, I don't know, unless it's their data, you know, that they get, you know, all the feedback and stuff from the data that they collect and all that, whether maybe there hadn't been enough interest and so they're just shifting resources and stuff on...
That's possible too. It would be a shame if there hasn't been the interest, because that is a really cool feature.
Yeah.
Big moments. I also wonder if there's some issues with the update system and with the synergy updates as well affecting the manual roster updates, but I guess, especially with the missing players, but I guess we'll see, and we'll continue to report on the situation and give our thoughts and keep everyone abreast of the latest developments. Speaking of recent developments regarding EA, there's a couple of interesting stories this week, and it's related to a game that we've covered, obviously, NBA Live, so we thought we'd mention it. But one of the big stories this week, EA is actually dropping out of E3 this year.
Yeah.
And when I first saw that headline, I thought, well, when are we going to get news on NBA Live each year? And what kind of coverage are we going to be able to do around E3? But as it turns out, they are going to be holding their own event around about that time, June 12th to 14th, much the same as other companies and developers are holding their own event. EA will host their own called EA Play, and this will actually be open to the public. So they get gamers will actually be able to get their hands on the game, so it's not going to be media-driven like E3, which is one of the more controversial aspects of E3 since they went solely media-only. EA has, of course, shown NBA Live at E3 the last few years and seemed very confident last year with the NBA Live 16, as we mentioned in podcasts last year. But, I mean, it remains to be seen what they'll do with NBA Live at this EA Play event, but it seems like a pretty good idea, putting the games in the hands of gamers and showing that kind of confidence and not really hiding behind hype or the usual media kind of approach to E3.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw it, I only got to see the headline, and I didn't get a chance to read the article because I didn't realize that there was more to it than that. I just thought, they're just going to use the Microsoft and Sony conferences enough just to
pick back on that. Yeah.
So, it wasn't until just before we actually started recording that you mentioned that they were going to be doing their own event. And I was like, oh, okay, but yeah, it seems to be based off the PlayStation Experience model that they've done the last 2 years, and that when they held a 2-day event, they do their little stage conference, obviously, but it's all hands-on with a lot of games and all that stuff, and conferences or like talks and speeches and stuff from developers and all that stuff, and a chance for the fans to really engage and learn more and play and experience it. Those events have been so successful over the last 2 years, that Sony are looking at doing that
absolutely
yearly now. So the fact that EA have looked at that and think, well, this model could work, I'm all for it, because it has been a message that EA had sort of started, say, back in 2014. During the E3 conferences and that. So, yeah.
And they've actually said, I'm looking at the EA Play announcement on EA.com, and it says, putting our players first, our players are the driving force behind everything we do. So this summer we're opening up our world to you with unique new live events in Los Angeles and London. We'll bring the new games, we'll bring the demos, we'll bring the competition, and you get to go hands-on. You can also join them online, immerse yourself to experience some of our biggest games of the year. Let's live to play together. So players attending the events will be able to get their hands on the game demos. There'll be other live events, competitions, etc. Special guest appearances, exclusive memorabilia, the usual convention conference stuff, and players viewing online. So there'll also be the live streams, take you into the event, live streams for all the new games, behind-the-scenes content, etc. So again, a lot of the stuff that they would do at E3, plus more, like the Sony experience. So hopefully a lot of information relevant to our community, I should say, with the NBA Live stuff. Hopefully some good stuff coming out of that June 12th to 14th.
Yeah, I reckon that's June's like mid-year Christmas, so for gaming and that. So yeah, after hearing that they're doing a 2-day event, I'm excited for it, because it'll be more than just a 3-minute clip and maybe like a 5-minute talk on the stage and stuff.
CGI demo.
Yeah.
Like NBA Live 14. Yeah. Certainly controversial.
So yeah, there'll be more. And the fact that, depending where that was in LA and London, you say?
London, yes. Yep. Yes.
So, we could have, any community members from the NLSC and I guess even OS, if they're able to attend it, we can get early.
Certainly. Yeah. Impressions, if somebody and stuff to, like that. Send us in, impressions and whatnot. That would hands-on time with the game, but that would definitely be appreciated. We'll
video over the shoulder video,
whatever we can get. Yeah.
Yep.
but yeah, certainly that is something we'll bring up again closer to the event if there's anyone who can attend and do a report for us and send that along. Then that certainly would be appreciated. We will obviously bring that up again closer to June. But this actually does tie into something that you sent along, and I think you actually might have even. I found this shortly after we wrapped recording last week, in fact, January 21st. In fact, it would have been, yes, that EA says that they're trying not to be the a greedy beast. They're trying to change the image, and this kind of stuff really goes along with that. I mean, you've still got microtransactions in the Ultimate Team modes for several of the games. EA has has done some questionable things, business practices with absorbing other studios. There's been controversies. SimCity, you know, the always online, always on, you know, always connected.
Yep. I mean, even Need for Speed has
Need for Speed
always you know. Online thing, but it relatively solid in terms of visuals and game some elements of the game.
Yeah, I mean, they have done some good work with the games, obviously, and you know, we can go into the issues with NBA Live over the years as well. You know, those are well documented within our community. But all that aside, I mean, you know, they've got this reputation that is hard to shed.
Yeah.
And even if they do some good work, there are people that are probably permanently alienated or simply, okay, it's EA, we're always going to hate EA, they're the bad guys, whatever. I've talked about it before. It's hard to counter that because people are always going to say that you're an apologist, but again, I've met, you know, actually not just by email, I've actually met developers from EA over the years in person, and, you know, these are not evil people. I mean, can't always speak of the higher-ups, although this is, you know, CEO Andrew Wilson talking about changing the perception, so it does go very high up. I mean, yeah. whether some of the accountants' pencil pushers, whether some of them have caused problems over the years, obviously, but, you know, I've met the people there. EA has obviously been pretty cool with us, not obviously flying me over there for various events, but not kicking up a stink that their trademark NBA Live is our domain name, or for a while was in the name of the site NBA Live Series Center before we just became the NLSC. So we've always had a decent, or pretty good, I should say, pretty good relationship with them as far as being able to work with them and them not, you know, sending us cease and desist and everything. So my interactions with them have been positive. My impressions of the games not always positive, but you know. It's an uphill battle for them to change the perception, and probably some people will never be won over. That's just the way it goes. No one can have 100% approval rating after all. But yeah, why not try and change business practices that are alienating customers and make a better impression?
Yeah, for me, again, this sort of comes into something I've mentioned earlier. Is around the 2004 was when for me when I started to see it. Potential change and shift in the way EA were operating and their restructuring and stuff during their E3 conference, where you know, they started to show games at an earlier stage and tried some more beta stuff, you know, early access, obviously this early access program that they do,
yeah,
things like that, and then
EA access as well, yeah. The being able to try the games, etc. Yeah,
then. You know, they bought two studios who do very different types of games to what, you know, they've been doing over the last few years. You got the indie team that worked on Brothers, Tale of Two Brothers, which is a beautifully crafted little game that came out on PS3 and Xbox 360. Was a contender for Game of the Year for a lot of categories and stuff like that from different various media sites. And then obviously, they got this new game, and actually, they re-released it and published it for PS4 and Xbox One. So that's come out in a remastered version. And then you got the little Yanni game, Unraveled, which looks, again, beautifully crafted little tight indie game, and that
very creative stuff. Yeah,
you know. So
it's not just the pumping out the annual sports titles, of course, which we cover in our community anyway, because we're a basketball gaming community.
Yeah.
But it's not just that kind of, and it's not like they're not doing creative stuff with basketball games, EA and of course 2K especially. But yeah, thinking outside the box with these different genres, as you said.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen how perception will change. Some people are always going to be cynical, perhaps rightfully so. Again, EA hasn't always done right by the consumer or some of the companies that they've absorbed, but you know, everyone deserves a chance to change, yeah. and learn from their mistakes. So.
Change can take a while. I mean, especially in a gaming time or gaming development time, some games take a couple of years. So, you know, they might stick to one structure while they finish one game, and it might be until the next one where they implement some of the elements of change and stuff like that. Or, you know, so yeah,
yeah.
It's probably be like a 3 to 5 year sort of progress. We the whole organization and that, and you know, because they got a lot of internal studios and sort of second party sort of in the, you know, the publish for and all that stuff, like with Crytek and all that. So Yeah, and they got some really big games coming out over the next 2 years and stuff like that, like Mass Effect and Andromeda. You got the Amy Hennig Star Wars game, things like that. So
some big properties that the people are obviously looking forward to. As far as our community is concerned, hopefully that means that more resources will be put into NBA Live as well. We talked a little bit about that last week with the rumors of the new staff members, the new developers joining the NBA Live team. Again, rumors that we cannot confirm or deny because we don't have any inside information on it, but hopefully that has been the case and that it's doing great things for NBA Live 17 and that that they'll be able to keep supporting NBA Live with funding and resources. So we will see, but certainly an interesting story coming out with Andrew Wilson making those comments and, of course, the EA Play replacing their presence at E3. But moving on to NBA 2K, not a whole lot of news this week. Probably we'll be talking a bit more about both Live and 2K is what we're playing because we'll both be able to play the games now since you're back at home with a PS4.
Yeah.
So in the future weeks, we'll once again get back to talking about what we're both playing a little bit more. But it is worth mentioning that the fifth patch has been pushed through for NBA 2K16. It's not a huge patch as far as a lot of gameplay tweaks or anything like that, as some of the previous ones have been. From the looks of the release notes, it's basically in preparation of the upcoming Road to the Finals 2K Pro-Am tournament, which we've talked about before. That's looks like that is coming very soon then, if they're pushing this patch through now. Fixes issues with... fix an issue where users are able to equip mascot costumes despite not having the appropriate rep level in My Park. Just a game disconnect issue... issues with causing unwanted ankle breaker reactions on defenders who are standing in good defensive positions. So there's a gameplay update. Resolved a rare case where Pro-Am Arena game would stall out of the loading screen. So a couple of gameplay issues and mostly technical issues. Certainly welcome that they're still addressing those issues, of course, but it's not one of the larger patches. But obviously a sign that the Pro-Am tournament is not far away at all.
Yeah, well, do you reckon just after All-Star Weekend time or probably, say, more March?
Yeah, I'd say probably maybe tipping off around about All-Star Weekend or a bit after that.
Yeah, I reckon so too. I'd say safe bet probably first week of March.
March at the latest, maybe.
Yeah, I think probably around All-Star Weekend we'll start hearing, you know, more information publicly, and then give.
There'll be lead ups to it. Yeah, they'll certainly be keeping us informed via social media, no doubt. But the fact that they've got this patch push through now, they're obviously wanting to get this stuff ironed out so people can get in there and get practice with their squads and have the game ready and stable for the eventual tip-off of the 2K Pro-Am tournament. So not too far away at all. That's pretty much it for the games this week. Once again, we will be talking a bit more about our gaming experiences once again now that we're both able to play, and maybe we can get some online games against each other in at some point as well. That would be fun, of course, but we do have a fair bit of NBA stuff to talk about this week. Big news, the All-Star Weekend is coming up, of course, in mid-February, early mid-Feb. The All-Star starters and reserves have been announced. The starters were announced last week after we finished recording, of course. Well, about 12 of us after we finished recording, I suppose. And the All-Star reserves also were announced today, so... Actually, it's probably best that we delay this week's episode because now we get to talk about it all in one.
Yeah, so paid off. Things happen for a reason, I guess.
It's serendipity. It's a happy coincidence. So in the East, we have a starting lineup of Dwayne Wade and Kyle Lowry in the backcourt, while the front court consists of LeBron James, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony. Out West, Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook are the backcourt, and the front court is Kobe Bryant, Kevin Durant, and Kawhi Leonard. Now, you'll notice, for both of those front courts, there are no centers, or big men, really.
No, which is, I think DeMarcus Cousins summed it up well from what I understand, is that, I can't remember the word that he used, but it probably wasn't an appropriate one.
Yeah, but it's, and here's the thing, when they changed the backcourt, front court of voting system, it had merit, and so at the time there weren't a lot of great centers in the league, but now we do have a few, and I thought that Drummond should probably be starting, you know, more traditional, have a traditional center in there, have Drummond starting in the East, DeMarcus Cousins starting in the West, I know that kind of puts a deserving starter out in the form of Kawhi Leonard or possibly Paul George. Or actually, no, Paul George would have that would have been Carmelo Anthony. Yeah, I probably would have put Drummond in the starting lineup over Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, I would have put Melo on the bench.
And I'd put Marcus Cousins there over Kobe Bryant, but he was a leading All-Star vote getter, so that wasn't going to happen.
I could have just imagined the pitchforks and stuff coming for you after saying that.
Well, I mean, by he got the vote, so he deserves to be there, and it's a farewell tour. I'm not going to argue against it, yeah. But really, it's by performance hasn't really earned a starting spot or a spot at all on the All-Star team, if we're going to be totally honest. But farewell tour again. Understandable, there's room for sentiment. Not going to get too upset about it. You know, it's a farewell tour. It's fine. It could be a fitting tribute, fitting end. But, yeah, it's very strange not to see any bigs at all, not even a bona fide power forward to start at centre.
Yeah, I know. And, I mean, I guess, you know, you're thinking maybe Blake Griffin and that, but obviously he's got his hand injury.
And he wasn't selected at all this year.
Yeah, so that's a surprise in that sense.
So who do you think jumps centre?
Well, obviously with Blake out, you could probably Aldridge.
Well, those are the starters.
Yeah.
That you're not going to... Those are who's going to jump center? It's got to be one of those...
True. Okay. Ah, damn.
I think it's got to be Durant and Paul George. They're the tallest. I mean, I suppose you could... if with given what's happened, you might as well just do Stephen Curry and Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
You know, just fun, because they've got no centers anyway, so why not?
I mean, I suppose LeBron could technically. I mean, he has played all five positions before, and
sure.
So,
any of those forwards for the East could, and Durant and Kawhi probably could as well for the West. But I'm guessing that they've just have the tallest player playing in the middle.
Yep.
But obviously, basketball's changing, and there's all kinds of, you know. It's a constantly evolving sport with the way it's being played and positionless basketball and all that stuff. But I don't know. I just there are still centers in the league and some pretty good ones. A couple of good ones have made both All-Star squads. I just feel that maybe we need to go back to the two guards, two forwards, and the center.
All right.
So it just feels a bit weird to have. I mean, it's okay when you've got a big forward like a Tim Duncan who can also play center. And I think that's why they made the change in the first place. But now you've got a few players playing the same position to choose from and a couple of decent centers. Yeah, I think the traditional form needs to go back.
I agree. It just, I don't know, it doesn't have that right feel about it, does it? It's sort of...
No.
Yeah.
Like I say, might as well have Lowry versus Curry in this opening tab. Oh, that's, you know, I suppose it doesn't really matter if they're all going to stand around shooting three-pointers. Well,
yeah.
Hopefully not again this year. Hopefully they actually play something that resembles a competitive game of basketball. Anyway, so the reserves were announced today in the East. John Wall, Jimmy Butler. I still feel Jimmy Butler should be a starter, but it is what it is with the fan voting. Paul Millsap, Andre Drummond, Chris Bosh, DeMar DeRozan, and Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas and Drummond, of course, both making their first appearance in the All-Star game. Isaiah Thomas very quietly putting up some big numbers for the Celtics.
Yeah, you know, he's shown a bit more maturity this year and you know, settled into a system where he's able to shine. So, I mean, he had some moments in Phoenix where he could show his glimpse, you know, what he's capable of in that. But
Phoenix and Sacramento before that, yeah. But it certainly seems to be coming into his own with the Celtics, which I'm sure John is very happy about.
Yeah.
So, but looking at those reserves... and we'll get to the West reserves in a moment, but that's a pretty talented group and a pretty solid selection. There's no one that I would say absolutely does not deserve to be there. No one, and we'll get to the snubs as well in a moment, but no one that absolutely should be there instead of them. That's the coaches have done pretty well this year.
Yeah, there's no questionable picks in that. So,
And even if you look at the starting lineup, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, maybe not their best years, but still playing well enough and still significant enough.
Wade's actually having a pretty good year compared to...
Compared to Jimmy Butler?
Well, compared to what he had, obviously, you know...
Compared to some of his years with LeBron's been there, yeah. I guess.
So,
but
yeah.
It's... I mean, if there is a... If there's players in the starting lineup for the East that I would probably have coming up... That I'd name of coming off the bench or replace it all, it would probably be them. More, perhaps more so Anthony than Wade.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty solid lineup, except for the fact there's no starting center.
Yep.
And it's a similar story in the West, actually, because in the West you've got Chris Paul, James Harden, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, and LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, the Warriors probably deserve to have the three players there, Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry, the best backcourt in the league right now. Draymond Green, triple-double machine. I've got no complaints about that. Anthony Davis, the Pelicans are doing badly, but he's doing pretty well himself. The Rockets up and down. James Harden has been putting up pretty good numbers despite that, and they've come up in the standings as of late. The only one, funnily enough, because the record team record's really good, the only one I'd really dispute is LaMarcus Aldridge.
He's
because his numbers aren't spectacular compared to what they've taken a hit with him joining the Spurs system.
Yeah, but I think over the last month he's sort of really started finding his ground.
He has. And again, the numbers on the season aren't too terrible either.
Yeah.
You know, not terrible at all, in fact. But that is, he is probably, if there's anyone that I would replace on the bench for the West, it would probably be him. But even so, he's still got a good argument, good case to be there. So,
yep.
Again, the only one that you can really dispute is Kobe, and by performance anyway, and certainly deserves to have the send-off. And got voted in by the fans, so the fans want to see him there. End of story, basically.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's been a while, I think, but this is one of the first All-Star games where you've actually got rosters where you really can't... There's a couple of snubs, which we'll talk about in a moment, but you can't really say that they were terrible picks. They're pretty solid picks top to bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably give it an 8.5, 9 out of 10 rating, I think, for the teams and that, so...
There's maybe two or three that are iffy selections.
Yeah, and a lot of that is like the non-traditional. Bandwork. Yeah, and the non-traditional sort of center now. So yeah.
See, Kawhi Leonard, I would argue, deserves to be in the game anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for how he's playing. So it's just the fact that the way the front court is set up. If he wasn't voted in with the format, he'd be there with the coaches, no doubt. He'd probably be there ahead of Aldridge in Aldridge's place. So. It's great to see. It's great to see such solid selections. We haven't really seen it for a while where people have always been a bit grumpy with the selections. I just hope we get a really good game now.
Yeah, same. I don't want that repeat of the threes. I agree with you. Last year's one was just terrible.
It cheapened Russell Westbrook's 41 points because there was very little defense. Everyone's just chucking up threes. You know, he didn't really have to work for those 41 points the same way that Jordan had to work for his 40, or Wilt Chamberlain his record 42.
Yep.
It's almost like they've said, oh, well, we can't really get the new records legit, so let's just lower the bar and find a way to get people to beat the records. Kind of like Stephen Curry, the extra rack of three balls to get the record in the three-point contest.
Yeah.
I did the calculations last year, and if he take out that money ball, that money extra money ball rack, he would not have beaten the record. So it feels a bit artificial, and he is fantastic shooters. It feels a bit artificial. Hopefully some defense, some semblance of defense and competitiveness throughout the game. At the very least, hopefully some more exciting highlights than we saw last year instead of just a bunch of threes from 35 feet out. Way too many of those.
Yeah. Unless they're going to just add some four-point rule from mid-court players.
Oh, they will. They'll add a five-point line or something as well just to get people to get someone to get 100 points in the game. Anyway, enough cynicism and grumpy things were better in my day, nostalgia. We've got a topic that's going to relate to that anyway. I'm going to have to curb that. So hopefully we get a good game, but a good set of All-Stars that'll hopefully put on a show. Speaking of putting on a show, I thought that last year's Rising Stars game was pretty good. I also like the concept that they changed it to Team USA to Team versus Team World. I think that's a pretty good way of doing it, to be honest. The old concepts were getting a little bit stale, so that they've changed it up. They've also named the rosters, which we can quickly run through on Team USA. Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, Zach LaVine, Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, Jabari Parker, Elfrid Payton, D'Angelo Russell, Marcus Smart, and Karl Anthony Towns. A good collection of young American players there.
Yeah, well... Yeah, you got the defending dunk champion in there and that, so that should make...
Scored 35 the other day on pretty good shooting, did Zach LaVine.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think it's going to be, I reckon, a fun game to watch.
It always is. And last year they actually competed a bit more than the big game, the All-Star game.
They actually went out with something to prove.
They actually went out and played basketball. Yep. You know, that's a looser street pickup game of basketball still, but at least they didn't just toss up threes.
Yep.
Enough of that. So on the Team World, the World Team, Bojan Bogdanovic, Clint Capella, Mario Hezonja, Nikola Jokic, Nikola Mirotic, Emmanuel Mude, Raul Neto, Kristaps Porzingis, Dwight Powell, and Andrew Wiggins. So once again, some pretty decent talent there, representing players around the world. Who do you... I suppose before we pick the winner of that one, we'll back up a bit. I suppose we'll do our predictions close to the All-Star weekend as well, but off the top of your head, who do you think's got to the East or the West in the big game?
I think this one I think could be a 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know one of them's going to win.
Yeah. But, you know, compared to, you know, some...
Yeah, it's fairly even. Yeah. I'm going to go with the West, simply because of Curry and Durant.
Yeah, that's pretty lethal. All right, well, I'll go East.
Go East, yeah. I want the East to win. I always go for the East, but at the moment I'm leaning West as far as my predictions. Okay, so, and the Rising Stars, early pick there, Team USA or Team World?
I think Team USA.
Yeah, we have to go with you on that one, Team USA.
No Aussies on Team World to really support.
No, we can't support this year.
We were lucky we had two last year, because obviously...
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll have to probably wait till next year with Ben Simmons.
Yeah. That'll give us something to look forward to. So, before we move on from the All-Star weekend, just wanted to talk about snubs real quickly. Because it has been such a pretty good selections for both teams, there's not many players that really... There's no big injustice this year, I feel, looking at it. The only one that comes close, I think, would be Damian Lillard of the Blazers. The Blazers don't have a fantastic record so far. That's kind of the way it's gone with the lower half of the West anyway. They are currently eighth in the West. He's averaging 24-7-4. 24 points, 7 assists, and 4 rebounds. Not the most efficient player. I'm actually just reading off my Friday 5, which I've just posted, so I'm cheating here. These are my picks for some of the snubs. Damian Lillard doing pretty well. Blake Griffin, worth mentioning, although obviously he is unavailable at the moment and wasn't selected anyway, wasn't going to be available. Dirk Nowitzki is still pretty solid. You could possibly argue him over LaMarcus Aldridge because of he's got slightly better numbers in some cases and has led the Mavericks to a arguably surprising 26-22 record so far. Reggie Jackson of the Pistons, 19.6 assists per game in the surprisingly improved Pistons. And actually, I would say Kemba Walker, as much as the Hornets have struggled more recently, got off to that pretty good start, and he's averaging 20 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists. But it's hard to put some of those guys over the players who made it, is the only thing.
Yeah,
but... So it's not, apart from Lillard, there's no huge snubs like some previous years, but some players I think that are at least worth mentioning.
Yeah, well, I agree with the Kemba Walker and Damian Lillard. I reckon they were fair, strong possibilities of being certainties in that. So probably next year for both those guys, if, you know, they would...
If it continues, yeah.
I
mean, the Hornets are doing better than the Wizards, but John Wall's putting up better numbers, so you can't really put Walker ahead of Wall. So,
And Wall has been an All-Star before, so...
It's sort of got seniority there. Yeah. It does come into play. A few of my honorable mentions. Al Horford, you could possibly put on there instead of Paul Millsap, both of them from the Hawks, and both kind of doing about the same as last year. So, and the Hawks a little bit... Still up there, but not quite as good as last year, so one representative seems fair. Probably could have gone either way with them.
I forgot that Pachulio, he was voted in, wasn't he?
He wasn't voted in, he was almost voted in.
Oh, okay. Just before they finalized it, he was
he's having a double-double this year, but yeah, I don't know why he was getting the votes instead of Dirk, but anyway, he's...
Well, I forgot if he had made it in or not, and if he had, then he would have been, that for me would have been a a bad decision if you had it in that way.
No, for whatever reason, he got all those votes, but no, he hasn't. Yep. He hasn't made it in. All
right. Well, things are right in the world in that sense.
Things are right, yeah. Pau Gasol, not quite as good as last year, but still doing pretty well. One of six players to average a double-double. Also, three assists and a couple of blocks per game. Marc Gasol also regressed a bit slightly, but still in the conversation, I'd say. CJ McCollum, a most improved candidate.
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah, I think he's in a contention again for potentially next year if he does well again. So yeah, I reckon, you know, there's a couple of borderline guys that will probably have more of a chance next year.
And the last one I mentioned in my Friday Five was Hassan Whiteside. I mean, it might be a bit overkill for the Heat, 25 and 21, to have. Sorry, 25 and 21. 21, yes. 25 and 21. For them to have three All-Stars in the game might be a bit overkill, but again, leading the league in blocks, almost four a game, a double-double.
And gets the triple-double, so yeah.
Again, another borderline guy who, depending on how his improvement continues, could be there next year.
Yeah, and especially depending on where he at, if he stays in Miami or goes somewhere else in free agency. This year, so
becomes a go-to guy. Becomes maybe a 20 and 10 player, perhaps, yeah. Or close to.
So yeah, he's one of those guys on the cusp. I mean, a small chance this year, but I think it was more needed that one more year just to sort of get more refined and improve. And then yeah, he would have been a certainty. So, but yeah, I'd like to see him in the All-Star game, that's for sure, and especially in one way, you know, they could actually play defense. And
that's right.
So yeah, otherwise. His abilities would be kind of wasted. Yeah, one of his best abilities would be wasted.
The defense, rebounding, and shot blocking. Yeah. It'd be nice to see him bring some of that fire back to the game, much the way Moses Malone did with some of those games in the 80s.
Yeah.
The Pontel tapes, which I still have. So the coaches of the West and the East will be Greg Popovich and Tyronn Lue, respectively, which brings us to a very interesting situation with... Tyronn Lue, who is the new coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And, you know, there's a meme out there that mentioned how Luke Walton couldn't coach in the game, which is because he's a Golden State Warriors coach and interim, and and Steve Kerr coached last year. So there's a lot of reasons why, technicalities, why he can't be, why he's not eligible, and why Greg Popovich is. Tyronn Lue, with a record of 2-1, was named the East All-Star coach because he has just taken over for David Blatt, who was very unexpectedly fired. Despite the fact the Cavs had won 11 of their last 13 games under him, and were on top of and still are top of the East. Lot of rumors about strings being pulled behind the scenes by LeBron and his group, which LeBron has come out against and said that is ridiculous. It's been pointed out in the forum that there's really only if he did get him fired, this is basically the first coach that he's actually gotten fired, because if you look at the other situations. Either they didn't get fired, or he already left when they got rid of Mike Brown, or was on the way out the first time that the Cavs fired Mike Brown.
And actually, just to remind me, you know, Pat Riley put out a statement, you know, because there was a whole speculation that he was trying to get Eric Spoelstra fired and stuff.
That's
like
right,
that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, in regards to him getting that stigma of being a coach killer and stuff. So yeah, I mean.
Well, here's the thing with Blatt. Here's the thing I say, acting like I'm an NBA insider. But from everything that I've read and from people who are close to the situation and have that, and do have the inside knowledge, the players had tuned him out. There were times when he didn't really know how to make adjustments. You know, there was the LeBron waving off the timeout last year,
yeah.
and that kind of thing. I mean, there's obviously situations where perhaps he didn't adjust to the NBA as well as he should. Maybe not saying he's a bad coach, obviously very... well-respected and successful in EuroLeague, in Europe, so but didn't maps not cut out for the NBA. And once you've lost the respect of the players, then that's kind of the writing's on the wall, even if you are on top of the Eastern Conference. The timing is surprising because I don't think we've ever seen a coach fired, you know, the year after making the finals and still being on top of the conference.
Yeah.
So that's unprecedented, but at the same time, if they felt that a change needed to come, because he just wasn't the guy cutting it long term. The writing was on the wall, obviously. You know, it's even if there was some shadiness or weirdness to it, maybe not the wrong call when in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look pretty and all that stuff. Obviously, no. As you know, being on the outside of the situation and all that, but you know, if it's a fair legitimate adjustment and, you know, not that sort of you know, speculative rumor thing that's going around, then yeah, I can understand it. But yeah, it just seemed kinda out of nowhere and that sort of thing. It's like, and given that the fact that yeah, they had been number, they're still the top of the ladder in the Eastern Conference and stuff. So yeah, it's just awkward and in that sort of sense for the team, I guess, and just the timing, or just yeah, how it came about in that sense.
But so we'll see how Tyronn Lue does, not only in the All-Star game, but in the second half of the season, whether, because he's apparently the guy that is favored by LeBron. LeBron actually apparently favored Mark Jackson, but Mark Jackson reportedly, with some of the things that he did on his exit, that caused his exit from the Golden State Warriors, perhaps being blackballed, apparently, from around the league. So that wasn't going to happen, which unfortunately means I have to keep listening to him on ESPN. But, oh well. So Tyronn Lue takes over. They lost their first game, which was to the Bulls, which I enjoyed watching. they have won a couple since. And, I mean, they've got LeBron and some decent players on the Cavs, so, and they are ahead of everyone else, so I imagine they'll keep doing fairly well.
Do you think they'll do some mid-season trades?
That's the rumor, that they're trying to bring in another big guy, or even a forward like Markieff Morris.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's possible that they're going to try and just really reload. Because, I mean, making that trade last year was what turned around and got them to the finals, getting Mozgov. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, that, oh, that a lot of Warriors fans saying, oh, so, you know, with the way they're playing, the Cavs, if the Cavs were healthy, they'd win the championship, right? Oh, yep. Because they've lost two games. The Warriors, the way they're playing this year, was not the same Warriors team that was playing in the finals. I mean, by personnel, they are pretty much the same team. But they were not playing this well in the finals, the Warriors. If the Cavs were healthy playing against those Warriors, they're up 2-1 on them, they possibly could have won, you know, if they were healthy.
Yep.
So it's, I mean, what kind of what-if situation? Yeah. I think that's just something that people have overlooked in the Warriors of last year. Somehow they've gotten even better this year. So,
which is absolutely scary.
It is, and you can't, it's tough to compare. And we are going to make some comparisons with the Warriors shortly, but yeah, I just wanted to mention that because it's one of those things that I've sort of seen that thrown out there a few times and thinking, yeah, but you're talking about teams who are playing very differently, you know. So the fact that they're beating up on teams this season doesn't change things about scenarios last year. Anyway, it's just something I wanted to throw out there, just to be pedantic, I guess. We talked about players who might likely get traded. And one of the guys that we didn't think was going to get traded actually did.
Yeah.
Josh Smith has been traded, and all teams back to Houston,
yeah,
where he was traded, where he signed on last year.
And yeah, and just a few short hours after we finished recording last
that's
week.
Right, as we're one to do. See, I think that Houston was probably the only team that was really offering anything, because the Clippers actually are paying part of his contract to sweeten the deal to actually get them to accept it. Basically, it was Josh Smith for a couple of draft rights to a couple of players who are probably never going to make it to the NBA, most likely. A couple of overseas players, cash consideration, just to get it done.
Yep.
The Clippers obviously wanted to get rid of him, not working out for them. But for Houston's point of view, I'm guessing they made the deal because he played pretty well for them last year, and they figure, well, maybe if we bring him back and he's back in the system with the players that he's pretty familiar with.
Friends
and
with Dwight.
Where he's doing well last year, that maybe he'll rekindle that better play from last season, which wasn't the case with the Clippers.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've never really considered him a great player and sort of a loose cannon that, but yeah, I mean, I just saw him as more of a highlight kind of play guy. That's
pretty good defender in his prime.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, he used to get some nice blocks with his athleticism and that, but yeah, just
not a franchise player.
Yeah,
so that shooting percentage, I guess. Certainly an exciting player, as you said. So Houston have rolled the dice on him, and so the Clippers did get to find a taker for him. Had to pay a bit of money to get it done, cash considerations. Just remains to be seen whether Lance Stephenson gets moved now, I suppose.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see I keep saying that seems to be my go-to sort of saying is it'll be interesting. But yeah, I wonder what teams will...
I noticed mine verbal tics as well, especially with the fight.
I wonder what teams will do the most reshuffling before the trade deadline.
Biggest move, I think, will be somebody like Cleveland that's just trying to really load up and take it to the next level, I think.
Yeah, finish the second half of the season on a strong note.
My prediction is if somebody makes a really disappointing trade, it's going to be the Bulls. Although I suppose I'm going to be personally disappointed by any deal that I don't think is going to be the Bulls. But if anyone makes a weird, disappointing salary dump trade, it's going to be the Bulls. You know, Jimmy Butler to the Lakers for no one. probably not.
Derrick Rose for a broom handle.
For a broom handle. Well, I mean, if the broom handle's got a decent contract, you know, more decent contract. Rose has actually been playing better lately. Got to give him that. He's been a bit more efficient, so that's been nice to see. But you never know what you're going to get with Derrick Rose. He's probably not going to make sense to anyone unless they got Rose's chocolates in other countries. But yeah, and it's not actually going to make sense because Rose's chocolates do have the shows you what you get in the Rose's chocolates. So I can't even make the Forrest Gump reference. Point is, Derrick Rose is a bit unpredictable with his health and performance at the moment, but. Yeah, with that contract, he's not going anywhere, as I said last week.
Yep.
But we're sticking with the Bulls because we want to make a historical comparison. It's been asked, comparisons between the 96 Bulls and the 2016 Warriors. Bulls did get the 72-10. The Warriors are chasing their record. So the question is posed to us. A while back, we had a discussion on the classic Lakers versus classic Bulls teams and which team would win that matchup, how well the 96 Bulls go against the current Warriors team. After seeing what they did to the Spurs recently, because that long anticipated matchup turned out to be very anticlimactic with the Spurs losing by 30, as did the Cavs and the Bulls previously. How do you think a Bulls Warriors clash would fare? Would Jordan guard Curry? The matchup of power forward Rodman versus Draymond Green, and which Aussie would come out on top in the middle? So I guess we'll take this some of these sub questions one at a time. Which Aussie, Luke Longley or Andrew Bogut?
Probably Longley.
Yeah, I'm going with Luke.
Yeah, I think, especially with the way Phil ran the triangle with him and all that stuff, I think just more effective in that sort of thing, in that role.
Bogut's never really been the same with him since his major injuries either.
Yeah,
He still makes a contribution, but Longley, if nothing else, was healthier during that run.
Yeah, I think that year, I think it was about the season before he went to the Warriors, I think, especially up until just... after the just after the All-Star game and that, he was, I think, probably in his better, he was in his probably, I guess, prime in that sense. He was one of only two players to be averaging, something like 10 rebounds or 10 or 12 rebounds plus at least two blocks a game or something like that. I think it was only him and Dwight.
Blocks, I think. He was doing well, but then he had that couple of horrific injuries there, and has never fully recovered, it seems, from that. So I will have to give that to Longley. Rodman versus Green, both stellar defenders in their time. Green with some of the great all-round stats. You know how I see this going down? Because Green can be a bit of a hothead sometimes, as can Rodman. But Rodman was a master of the mind games.
Yep.
Do you remember when he got Frank Bukowski to almost fight him in the 96 finals? Frank Bukowski, and you're saying people saying who is Frank Bukowski? Exactly, that's how we remember Frank Bukowski. Because he had that moment with Dennis Rodman, where he's just staring at him in the finals. I think Rodman. First of all, Rodman is just going to eat up the rebounds.
Yeah, I think the other thing that could be a key factor in this is the rules and regulations between the two time periods.
Oh, if it's physicality, forget about it.
Yeah, if it was playing the 90s style, you're definitely going to give it to Rodman.
Yeah.
If it's more how the game is played now, I think it's a little bit closer matchup.
Possibly, but you see what Drummond has done with the rebounds. I think Rodman in this day and age, he'd probably average like a Chamberlain-esque 20 boards a game. I think he could.
Yeah.
I think he could, especially with the pace. I mean, even with the slower pace of the late 90s, he was averaging 16 rebounds a game. So he can, he's a monster on the boards. And I think he'd get in Green's head, get him chucked out.
Yeah.
would Jordan guard Curry? No, I think Pippen would.
Yep.
You can serve Jordan to just... I think Jordan probably would at times match up with Curry. But I think that if they'd put Pippen on him much the way they did with Magic in the 91 finals. And You know, I think Curry's obviously a fantastic shooter. I think that Jordan and Pippen, you know, running Jordan Pippen and even Ron Harper could do a pretty good job in his later years as a defender. With their size alone and their athleticism, I think they'd be able to give Curry some problems.
Oh, yeah. Again, you know, just how aggressive in terms of their competitiveness and stuff with the way Jordan and Pippen was, I think given out of, say, if they had to play, if like a, you know, how you normally say, like maybe a 9 out of 10 times kind of thing, I think somewhere at least between 7 or 8 out of the 10 times that they'd be able to get the one up, Jordan and Pippen would get the one up.
And with the physicality, I mean, you look at it. It struck me the other day when somebody posted. Well, somebody, it was I forget which page. It might have been the NBA on ESPN page posted an Instagram picture of Michael Jordan next to Stephen Curry because they were comparing the Bulls records to the Warriors records at the same time.
Yep.
And it struck me, you know, the size difference between Jordan and Curry, like because Jordan was a pretty very strong, you know, quite muscular, very strong. A lot of the people who played against him said didn't really realize. I mean, everyone talked about how he could jump and hang in the air and everything and shoot and whatever. But said he was, for a shooting guard, a swingman, really strong because he did the weight training, which really came into vogue in the late 80s, early 90s. It wasn't just the big men, it was also the guards doing it. And Curry next to him looked like he was 12 years old, to be honest.
Curry's sort of like stringy and very much, just...
I don't know if Curry would have survived in the 80s. I think if he'd play the Pistons, the same Pistons that used to beat up on Jordan, I think he'd be in a body cast.
I could see full body. Yeah. I could picture that.
But, I mean, with Jordan guard Curry to the best of his ability. I think Pippen would as well and do a pretty decent job. Who would guard Michael Jordan? I think if they put Curry on Jordan, he's averaging 60, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's getting a ridiculous amount of points because he's just going to either overpower him. Curry's not a terrible defender, but he's not a stellar one either. Not a stellar two-way
player. Probably Draymond. Clay
Thompson's not going to do better. No. Draymond Green could probably do a pretty good job, but you know, I remember the story of the Craig Hodges recounted once, reading about it, and said that once Pippen challenged Jordan in practice to go one-on-one and defend him, and said then he said Michael then proceeded to score on Scotty at will. until Scotty asked him to slow down and he's up. That's Scotty Pippen, one of the greatest defenders of all time with the physical tools and, you know, the defensive know-how. Playing, if anyone could shut down Michael Jordan, it'd be Scotty Pippen because he's there against him every day in practice.
Yep.
If the only way you could get him to stop was to ask him to slow down, I'm sorry. LeBron's not shutting him down. Kobe in his prime's not shutting him down. Draymond Green is not shutting him down. Andre Iguodala, fine defender as well, not shutting him down.
The only way you can shut him down is a landmine.
That's right. And, well, I think at one point, if you had like a 7-game series between them, you know, you'd have a game where Draymond Green maybe holds him to a poor shooting game. Draymond Green's going to mouth off after the game and, you know, talk about how, oh, he's not all that, you know, shut him down. And the next game, Jordan's going to come out and score 40 in the first half.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to be Dream Team Jordan. He's not going to be 6-time champion Jordan. He's not going to be greatest of all time Jordan. He's going to be FU, I'm Michael Jordan Jordan. And That's the I'm dropping 37 points in the first half on LeBradford Smith. Who's LeBradford Smith, you ask? Exactly. Once again, Frank Rakowski, LeBradford Smith. Exactly.
I just pictured scenes of, like, you know, when Homer Simpson is becoming, does a training thing, the course thing for becoming a Krusty Clown, and he does the hamburger, and then, like, the kids are, like, begging him to stop because he's already dead. That's the whole situation with the whole Jordan versus Pippen one-on-one game. That's the vision that came to mind.
So I think Jordan's definitely going to get his, you know, against the Warriors. They've got some good defenders on the Warriors, but Joe Dumars, who did a pretty good job on Jordan back in the day, said, you know, with today's rules, you wouldn't be able to guard him, you know. As it was, the Pistons really had to beat up on him, and he still once dropped 61 points on them. So, yeah, I don't think anyone... Curry's going to be very hard to contend, don't get me wrong. I don't think they're going to contend Jordan. Now, to get to the main thing, who's going to win, how would it fare? It would be very easy to say, oh, well, you know, Jordan's going to do this and Pippen's going to do that and they're going to show these whippersnappers that today's NBA is not all that and they're going to beat him by that. I'm not actually going to say that because even though I think Jordan's going to get his, I think the Warriors, seeing the way they're beating up on teams, seeing the way Stephen Curry can just rain threes, I think it would be a very, very competitive game. I would still pick the Bulls in a 7-game series because I just can't pick against Michael Jordan. When did Michael Jordan ever lose in 6 NBA finals? Like the whole series. Yeah. Single happened. Games, yes. Whole series didn't happen. Him and Pippen together, greatest duo of all time. Just going to throw it out there. I would go with the Bulls. It's got slightly a sentimental pick, but I think they played with tougher defense, more physicality. They were forged in a time when there was a lot more physicality and harder defense. I think there's a lot, you could argue there's smarter defense these days. I don't know whether it's necessarily as tough, though. So I picked the Bulls, but you know what? I do think the Warriors would make it. They'd make him work for it. I would absolutely give them that. You know, I'm not going to say, yeah, the Warriors are going to get blown up by 50 points. No, that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Spend all this time, you know, building up the Bulls, but no. That's a bit too much, you know. Credit where it's due. These Warriors are a legitimate threat to beat the record. Although, you know, if we're going to take the record away from the Bulls because the league was, quote-unquote, watered down with expansion, there's one extra team now. So, you know, fair's fair, I guess, if we're going to make that argument. But either way, you know, the point is you play the competition you have, and you've got to continue to win all those games. They're one game ahead of the Bulls' pace at the moment. It is very possible. It's very possible we'll see the record broken.
Yeah.
Does that mean that they are necessarily better than the Bulls? Not necessarily, but they are a very good team, and I think it would be a hell of a series.
I reckon it would be as well.
Actually, the funny thing is, you know what I really think would be the tough matchup for the Warriors?
Which one?
Not so much the 96 Bulls, although they have the record of 72-10, but the 92 Bulls, who were 67-15, they came pretty close to 70 themselves.
Yeah.
But that's Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in their physical prime as well. You know, that's Jordan, you know, around about the age of 30 before he took a year off, you know, a couple of years before he took the year off from baseball.
Yeah.
I think that Jordan's scoring 100 against this Warriors team with the defense and today's rules. I think he's scoring 100.
What about Jordan when he, you know, the season where he scored 3,000, which would have been his third season where he was...
Oh, that's, yeah. You know, that's Dresden Petrovic in Europe numbers, I think. That's someone in high school scoring 200 points, possibly.
Yep.
That Jordan with that score, that scorer's mentality and, you know, that defense and everything. Because I think that was the year he also dropped 61 on those Pistons. Yeah. So I'm always going to take Jordan and the Bulls in that respect. But credit where it's due. These 2016 Warriors have a chance at history, have already made history. And they would be a tough, tough opponent for pretty much anyone, any of the great teams in history. I think they would, I think they could hold their own. Not necessarily win, you know, in a 7-game series, but definitely hold their own.
I agree.
And looks like they're going to win this year. If nothing else, you know, we'll never know. We'll never know if they could beat the old teams. We can't time travel, sadly, but we can look ahead to the future and see what's likely going to happen. And very real possibility, 2 in a row, and maybe at least 70 wins. So. You know, they're halfway there, more than halfway there, so we will see. Before we wrap up, a couple more topics to get to. Also looking back at some of the biggest draft busts in NBA history. I have different classifications when I talk about busts because you've got the players who just projected to do great things, picked high, and didn't turn out. You've got the players who still had pretty solid careers, but just maybe picked a couple of slots too high or, you know, maybe picked first overall and they were solid players, not superstar players. Maybe like a Joe Smith, for example.
Yep.
You've got players who could have been great, but they were injured. You've got complete tragedies like a Len Bias, you know, at the 1986 with the overdosing before he even played in the NBA. And then you've got players who... What was another category? I might have skipped... I think those are my main categories, the players that... simply were complete busts, didn't turn out, projected to do way better than they ever could have. Players who were a little bit overrated, players who could have done better, but they were injured, and complete tragedies. Len Bias, I think, is in a class by his own. But with that in mind, you know, they all are busts in their own right. Who do you think are some of the biggest draft busts in recent and past history?
I suppose easy picks are Kwame Brown and Adam Morrison.
Mm-hmm. There's to say about the great Adam Morrison.
Yeah.
Sam Bowie?
Yeah. I mean,
he's kind of in my pick. You know, he actually had a pretty decent career, but he was kind of, you know, picked before Michael Jordan, John Stockton, and yeah. Charles Barkley. So,
yeah. Just...
Even Kevin Willis had a better career, so, you know.
Yeah, probably just picked way too early for him.
Greg Oden is another one of the injured, because Bowie was injured as well.
Yeah.
Greg Oden could have had a lot better career, much more solid. Apparently he's doing pretty okay in China at the moment, I read. But obviously health, his knee injuries and coming in didn't do him any favors, so he's kind of in the injured category. Jay Williams of the Bulls.
Yeah.
With the cycle accident. So you've got the ones that, again, like I say, could have been a lot better, but injuries derailed their careers before they really got going.
Bobby Phils, because he...
I mean, he had a pretty good career. He was a lower draft pick as well.
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
I mean, in tragedies, that's a separate category. Yeah. I mean, Len Barnes, Bobby Phils, Malik Sealy, absolutely.
Who else could there be?
Eddie Curry's kind of in there, I think.
Sorry?
Eddie Curry.
Yeah, definitely.
Being picked. Darius Miles, sort of. You know, stuck around. Injuries helped prevent him from having a really long career. He was okay, but certainly not... People talk about him being the next Kevin Garnett, which he wasn't.
You can't really say. I mean, yeah, Brandon Roy, I mean, his career was cut short because of the knees, but he wasn't a bust. It was just unfortunate for him.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he had too many really good years, I think.
Oh, yeah.
He could be Lauri Martin, picked first overall in like 1972, played 4 years in the league, none of them particularly good.
What pick was Tyronn Lue?
We're not doing busters coaches.
No, but his career didn't even last long. I mean, he's more famous for the Iverson stepping over him.
Let me see. He played from 98 to 2009. He played 11 years in the league.
Yeah,
he was the 23rd pick in 98. So, I mean, standard kind of career.
I thought he barely even played 5 seasons.
No.
Wow. Okay, I stand corrected. It just... Okay. Yeah, I thought it was just a really, really short career that he had, and just remember that, it was Iverson stepping over.
I mean, by today's standards, 11 years probably is short, because we've got Kobe playing 20th year, we've got a few players approaching the 20 years, or at the 20-year mark already, or 21 years in Kevin Garnett's case, but I'm trying to think of some of the other obvious ones. Michael Olowokandi, probably.
Yes.
Certainly a bust as a number one pick. Joe Smith, I think, is not really a bust. He had a pretty solid journeyman career, just probably, you know, to be taken first overall ahead of Antonio McDyess and Kevin Garnett, Jerry Stackhouse, you know, anyone. Certainly Kevin Garnett being the top pick in my mind these days, if we do that draft again. But, you know, any of those players, Stackhouse or Antonio McDyess, Jason Caffey, no. Michael Finley, a few players, you know, that's a better top five than there actually was. So, anyone else come to mind?
No, I can think of at the moment. Probably like tomorrow, I'll probably think of one or two more. But it's can't think of any at the moment. There's been just a lot of players to try and. It's like even trying to think back to like old songs or artists that you liked. It was like difficult at times.
Eric Montross, kind of.
Yeah, kind of.
Probably picked a bit too high. Todd Fuller picked 8th or sort of around about, he was picked before Kobe in 1996, 20 years ago, so he probably qualified.
Bryant Reeves.
Yeah, he was doing okay for the 7th pick, I think he was, with, I know injuries ended his career. Big country, great nickname.
Because, he didn't play as long as expected.
Stoudemire.
Stoudemire,
I was watching the 96 All-Star Weekend on Pontel tape, and... it's Pontel VHS tape, I should say, ordered from Pontel. And they're watching the rookie game, and they quoted Damon Stoudemire and said, you know, we better enjoy this rookie game because you may never make it back to the All-Star game. And it's quite prophetic because he never did. So
so they called that one.
So yeah, talk about, you know, choosing your words carefully.
Yeah.
So we might revisit that in a future episode as well, just to see if we can get a few more of the popular picks. But sort of those real... Skishvili, picked by the Nuggets, 5th overall, I think in 2001, 2002, he did pretty badly as well. So, certainly a few noteworthy busts. Michael Jordan, unfortunately, has picked a couple of them as an executive.
Yep.
His career as a player much more impressive than in the front office. Although, Hornets starting to turn around,
The fact that they signed Batum and that, they're starting to really, and how... well, Kemba is playing, so yeah.
It's got. I think he's got some better people around him
that
is giving them rein to do this stuff. So that's how Jordan's improving as an owner in the league. So we are almost at the end. Just a couple of things to talk about. Perhaps the most important thing that we need to acknowledge, and before we wrap up the episode, that we need to do is our new favorite segment towards the end of each show, and that, of course, is Bold Predictions! And I am, of course, not on the scoreboard, because the Spurs did not only not defeat the Golden State Warriors, but they lost by 30, so I can really pick it. I'm 0 of 7, you are 4 of 7. The East didn't quite catch up to your expectations. No, we don't have the 11 teams in the East, 500 or better, so we're both scoreless in the last couple of weeks. You at least are on the board. I'm still trying to get there. And to that extent, to that end, I am going a little bit more conservative with my bold prediction this week. I'm trying not to go that out there, although I did think the Spurs one was at least a bit safer than my other picks. Nevertheless, I'm going to say that the Warriors, I'm going to actually not pick against them for once, which means they probably are going to lose the game, because that's just the way it goes. But I'm going to say that the Golden State Warriors, they've been beating teams by 30 or more recently. I'm going to say they will defeat the Philadelphia 76ers by at least 40 or more when they face them. I'm going to say they win by at least 40, just completely annihilate them.
I reckon that's a good odds bet. So, yeah, in my one, I was looking at originally going to go see if the 76ers could equal the Lakers winning, like, they have the same win-loss record by next week or not, but given that one team plays one more game, and also who they play against,
fainting the Warriors.
Yeah. So it was like, yeah, no, that one's not going to work.
I mean, I've just jinxed the Warriors, surely.
But I decided to go with the Spurs beating the Cavaliers. I think that's the one on Saturday US time. So yeah, that's the one I'm going with.
Spurs over Cavs, is much the same as the 2007 finals. Yep. Maybe a slightly higher rated game this time around, though. And two teams lost to the Warriors by 30 or more, but perhaps will fare a little bit better against each other. Oh, and of course the All-Star coaches going up against one another, obviously. So trivia all around. Going to wrap up on a rather bizarre story, to be completely honest. We mentioned that Blake Griffin is out with injury. He was injured earlier this year, came back. He's out, expected 4 to 6 weeks after injuring his right hand, breaking some bones, fracturing his hand, in an altercation where he, during an argument with an assistant equipment manager on the Clippers, a fellow that's a lot smaller than he is, they apparently got into an argument in a restaurant during the team's trip to Toronto. There's a tongue twister for you, team's trip to Toronto.
It's almost like the alphabet rap where...
So, Matisse Testi, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, assistant equipment manager for the Clippers, got into an altercation with Griffin. Griffin, the athlete, the much larger individual, suffered a suspected fracture in his hand after punching the guy in the face. He had visible injuries to his face, apparently, and very disturbing. Where he actually sort of hit him and he staggered out of the restaurant, and apparently Griffin followed him outside and still... So what happened between them was quite contentious, shall we say.
Yeah.
So that, a bit irresponsible, obviously, to say the least. Griffin injuring himself, putting himself out of action for the Clippers, who are fourth in the...
West,
4th, 30-16, as of the time we're recording this. And, really got to control your temper a bit better than that, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've all had moments where, but still, yeah, you got to put it in check.
I mean, this actually makes Amari Stoudemire's incident look okay, because at least he was frustrated and just took it out in that
person
object.
And not a fire extinguisher.
It's kind of a bit bullying, really, to be punching this small guy, a lot smaller than you. Of course, size isn't everything in a fight. Yeah. I mean, a skilled fighter in martial arts or something, you can certainly whoop some ass.
Yeah,
but. Yeah.
You sounded so white saying that. I was like, Conan O'Brien white saying
that. The problem is with that is that I wanted to say ass, but then defaulted to the Australian ass, and it just made it sound even more awkward. Anyway, it's a kind of disturbing story, really, and even more disturbing than me saying whoop ass. Hopefully they can smooth it over and he can control his temper, I guess.
You know, one thing that I miss is, remember the fire extinguishers Twitter account?
Oh, I don't think I ever saw that. I mean,
there was just hilarious tweets. It's like the first one was like, "Come at me, bro," and things like that.
All right.
Yeah, you know, when that whole thing started, yeah, there was just some very good classic tweets.
What they need is a Twitter account for the hole in the wall in the Warriors arena,
yeah.
Where through the garbage can. They showed that during the game the other day, the Mavericks Warriors game. Apparently he signed it. They must have got him up on a ladder, and he's actually signed it, Dirk Nowitzki. So he's been a good sport about it. You know, a few years later, he won his first championship. So I guess he's got the last laugh over the NBA in that regard. But yes, that has brought us to the end of episode number 143 of the NLSC podcast. As always, thank you for your topic suggestions. Hope you enjoyed tuning in and listening to us give our opinions on everything that we talked about this week. We'll be back, of course, next week with more fun and games. If you'd like to make sure that you always get the latest episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher. If you want to listen to us on the go, just search for NLSC Podcast, or keep streaming it on the NLSC, of course. As long as you're tuning in and enjoying it, that's the main thing. Keep those topic suggestions coming as well. Follow us on Twitter at the NLSC. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. And keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for all the original content and patches and everything else we do in the community, including, of course, future episodes of the podcast. But until then, thank you once again for tuning in. I am Andrew.
I'm Arcane.
And until next week, this week's tip, when you're driving to the basket in basketball video games, don't neglect that left, that right stick, you know, an extra crossover. That can be the difference. See you next week.
See you next week, everyone.